the 28th of May. Up and by coach to St. James's, where I find Sir William Coventry, and he desirous to have spoke with me. It was to read over a draft of a letter which he hath made of his brother commissioners, and him to sign to us, demanding an account of the whole business of the navy accounts. And I perceive by the way he goes about it that they will do admirable things. He tells me they have chosen Sir George Downing their secretary, which will be as fit a man as any in the world. And said, by the by, speaking of the bankers being fearful of Sir George Downing's being secretary, he being their enemy, that they did not intend to be ruled by their secretary, but do the business themselves. My heart is glad to see so great hopes of good to the nation as will be by these men, and it doth me good to see Sir William Coventry so cheerful as he now is on the same score. Thence home, and there fell to seeing my office and closet there made soundly clean, and the windows cleaned, at which all the morning, and so at noon to dinner. After dinner my wife away down with Jane and Will Hewer to Woolwich, in order to a little air, and to lie there to-night, and so to gather May Dew to-morrow morning, which Mistress Turner hath taught her as the only thing in the world to wash her face with, and I am contented with it. Presently comes Creed, and he and I by water to Vauxhall, and there walked in Spring Garden, a great deal of company, and the weather and garden pleasant. That it is very pleasant and cheap going thither, for a man may go to spend what he will, or nothing, all as one. But to hear the nightingale and other birds, and hear fiddles and there a harp, and here a Jew's trump, and here laughing, and there fine people walking, is mighty divertising. Among others there were two pretty women alone that walked a great while, which, being discovered by some idle gentlemen, they would needs take them up. But to see the poor ladies, how they were put to it to run from them, and they after them, and sometimes the ladies put themselves along with other company, then the others drew back. At last the ladies did get off out of the house and took boat and away. I was troubled to see them abused so, and could have found my heart as little desire of fighting as I have, to have protected the ladies. So, by water, set Creed down at Whitehall, and I to Old Swan, and so home. My father gone to bed, and wife abroad at Woolwich, I to Sir William Penn, where he and his lady and Peg and pretty Mistress Lowther, her sister-in-law, at supper, where I sat and talked, and Sir William Penn, half drunk, did talk like a fool and vex his wife, that I was half pleased and half vexed to see so much folly and rudeness from him, and so late home to bed. The 29th of May. Up and by coach to St. James's, where, by and by, up to the Duke of York, where, among other things, are Parson Mills, having the offer of another benefice by Sir Robert Brooks, who was his pupil, he, by my Lord Berkeley's desire, is made one of the Duke's chaplains, which qualifies him for two livings. But to see how slightly such things are done, the Duke of York only taking my Lord Berkeley's word upon saying that we, the officers of the Navy, do say he is a good man and minister of our parish, and the Duke of York admits him to kiss his hand, but speaks not one word to him, but so a warrant will be drawn from the Duke of York to qualify him, and there's an end of it. So we into the Duke's closet, where little to do but complaint for want of money, and a motion of Sir William Coventry's, that we should all now bethink ourselves of lessening charge to the King, which he said was the only way he saw likely to put the King out of debt. And this puts me upon thinking to offer something presently myself, to prevent its being done in a worse manner without me, relating to victualling business, which, as I may order it, I think may be done, and save myself something. Thence home, and there settle to some accounts of mine in my chamber all the morning till dinner. My wife comes home from Woolwich, but did not dine with me, going to dress herself against night, to go to Mistress Pierce's to be merry, where we are to have Nip and Harris and other good people. I at my accounts all the afternoon, being a little lost in them as to reckonings of interest. Anon comes down my wife, dressed in her second mourning, with her black moire waistcoat and short petticoat, laced with silver lace so basely that I could not endure to see her, and with laced lining, which is too soon, so that I was horrid angry and went out of doors to the office, and there stayed, and would not go to our intended meeting, which vexed me to the blood, and my wife sent twice or thrice to me to direct her any way to dress her, but to put on her cloth gown, which she would not venture, which made me mad. And so, in the evening, to my chamber, vexed, and to my accounts, which I ended to my great content, and did make amends for the loss of our mirth this night by getting this done, which otherwise I fear I should not have done a good while else. So to bed. The 30th of May. Up and to the office, where all the morning, at noon, dined at home, being, without any words, friends with my wife, though last night I was very angry, and do think I did give her as much cause to be angry with me. After dinner I walked to Arundel House, the way very dusty, the day of meeting of the society being changed from Wednesday to Thursday, which I knew not before because the Wednesday is a council day, and several of the council are of the society, and would come but for their attending the king at council, where I find much company, indeed very much company, in expectation of the Duchess of Newcastle, who had desired to be invited to the society, and was, after much debate pro and con, it seems many being against it, and we do believe the town will be full of ballads of it. Anon comes the Duchess with her women attending her, among others that Ferra Bosco of whom so much talk is, that her lady would bid her show her face and kill the gallants. She is indeed black, and hath good black little eyes, but otherwise but a very ordinary woman, I do think, but they say sings well. The Duchess hath been a good comely woman, but her dress so antic, and her deportment so unordinary, that I do not like her at all, nor did I hear her say anything that was worth hearing, but that she was full of admiration, all admiration. Several fine experiments were shown her of colours, lodestones, microscope, and of liquors, among others of one that did, while she was there, turn a piece of roasted mutton into pure blood, which was very rare. Here was Mr. Moore of Cambridge, whom I had not seen before, and I was glad to see him, as also a very pretty black boy that ran up and down the room, somebody's child in Arundel House. After they had shown her many experiments, and she cried still she was full of admiration, she departed, being led out and in by several lords that were there, among others Lord George Berkeley and the Earl of Carlisle, and a very pretty young man, the Duke of Somerset. She gone, I by coach home, and there busy at my letters till night, and then with my wife in the evening singing with her in the garden with great pleasure, and so home to supper and to bed. The 31st of May. Up, and there came young Mistress Daniel in the morning, as I expected, about business of her husband's. I took her into the office to discourse with her about getting some employment for him, and there I did put my hand to her belly, so as to make myself do, but she is so lean that I had no great pleasure with her. So parted, and I by water to Whitehall to the Lords Commissioners of the Treasury, the first time I ever was there, and I think the second that they have met at the Treasury Chamber there. Here I saw Duncombe look so big and takes as much state on him as if he'd been born a lord. I was in with him about Tangier, and at present received but little answer from them, they being in a cloud of business yet, but I doubt not but all will go well under them. Here I met with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, who tells that he is told this day by Secretary Morris that he believes we are, and shall be, only fooled by the French, and that the Dutch are very high and insolent, and do look upon us as come over only to beg a peace, which troubles me very much, and do fear it is true. Thence to Sir George Carteret at his lodgings, who I perceive is mightily displeased with these new treasurers, and he hath reason, for they will eclipse him, and he tells me that my Lord Ashley says they understand nothing, and he says he believes the king doth not intend they shall sit long. But I believe no such thing, but that the king will find such benefit by them as he will desire to have them continue, as we see he hath done in the late new act that was so much decried about the king, but yet the king hath since permitted it and found good by it. He says, and I believe, that a great many persons at court are angry at the rise of this Duncombe, whose father, he tells me, was a long Parliament man, and a great committee man, and this fellow used to carry his papers to committees after him. He was a kind of an attorney. But for all this, I believe this man will be a great man in spite of all. Thence I away to Holborn to Mr. Gordon, whom I met at Bernard's Inn Gate, and straight we together to the Navy Office, where we did all meet about some victualling business, and so home to dinner and to the office, where the weather's so hot nowadays that I cannot but sleep before I can do any business. And in the evening, home, and there, to my unexpected satisfaction, did get my intricate accounts of interest, which have been of late much perplexed by mixing of some monies of Sir George Carteret's with mine, evened, and set right. And so, late to supper, and with great quiet to bed, finding by the balance of my account that I am creditor £6,900, for which the Lord of Heaven be praised. June 1667. The first. Up, and there comes to me Mr. Commander, whom I employ about hiring of some ground behind the office, for the building of me a stable and coach-house, for I do find it necessary for me, both in respect to honour, and the profit of it also, my expense in hackney-coaches being now so great, to keep a coach, and therefore will do it. Having given him some instructions about it, I to the office, where we sat all the morning, where we have news that our peace with Spain, as to trade, is wholly concluded, and we are to furnish him with some men for Flanders against the French. How that will agree with the French I know not, but they say that he also hath liberty to get what men he pleases out of England. But for the Spaniard, I hear that my Lord Castlehaven is raising a regiment of 4,000 men, which he is to command there, and several young gentlemen are going over in commands with him. And they say the Duke of Monmouth is going over only as a traveller, not to engage on either side, but only to see the campaign, which will be becoming him much more than to live whoring and roguing of it here, as he now does. After dinner, to the office, where, after a little nap, I fell to business, and did very much with infinite joy to myself, as it always is to me when I have dispatched much business. And therefore, it troubles me to see how hard it is for me to settle to it sometimes, when my mind is upon pleasure. So home, late to supper and to bed. The 2nd of June, Lord's Day. Up betimes and down to chamber, without trimming myself or putting on clean linen, thinking only to keep to my chamber to do business today. But when I came there, I find that without being shaved, I'm not fully awake, nor ready to settle to business, and so was fain to go up again and dress myself, which I did, and so down to my chamber and fell roundly to business, and did to my satisfaction by dinner go far in the drawing up a state of my accounts of Tangier for the new Lords Commissioners. So to dinner, and then to my business again all the afternoon close. When Creed came to visit me, but I did put him off and to my business, till anon I did make an end and wrote it fair, with a letter to the Lords to accompany my account, which, I think, will be so much satisfaction, and so, soon done, their order for my doing it being dated but May the 30th, as they will not find from any hand else. Being weary and almost blind with writing and reading so much today, I took boat at the Old Swan, and there up the river all alone, as high as Putney almost, and then back again, all the way reading and finishing Mr. Boyle's Book of Colours, which is so chemical that I can understand but little of it, but understand enough to see that he is a most excellent man. So back and home, and there to supper and so to bed. The 3rd of June. Up and by coach to St. James's and with Sir William Coventry a great while, talking about several businesses, but especially about accounts, and how backward our treasurer is in giving them satisfaction. And the truth is, I do doubt he cannot do better. But it is strange to see that being conscious of our doing little at this day, nor for some time past in our office, for want of money, I do hang my head to him and cannot be so free with him as I used to be, nor can be free with him, though of all men I think I have the least cause to be so, having taken so much more pains, while I could do anything, than the rest of my fellows. Parted with him, and so, going through the park, met Mr. Mills, our parson, whom I went back with to bring him to William Coventry, to give him the form of a qualification for the Duke of York to sign to enable him to have two livings, which was a service I did, but much against my will, for a lazy fat priest. Thence to Westminster Hall, and there walked a turn or two with Sir William Doyley, who did lay a wager with me the treasurership would be in one hand, notwithstanding this present commission, before Christmas, on which we did lay a pole of ling, a brace of carps, and a bottle of wine, and Sir William Penn and Mr. Scowen to be at the eating of them. Thence down by water to Deptford, it being a Trinity Monday, when the master is chosen. And there, finding them all at church, and thinking they dined as usual at Stepney, I turned back, having a good book in my hand, The Life of Cardinal Wolsey, wrote by his own servant, and to Ratcliffe, and so walked to Stepney and spent my time in the churchyard looking over the gravestones, expecting when the company would come, but finding no company stirring, I sent to the house to see, and it seems they dine not there, but at Deptford, so I back again to Deptford, and there find them just sat down, and so I down with them, and we had a good dinner of plain meat, and good company at our table. Among others, my good Mr. Evelyn, with whom after dinner I stepped aside and talked upon the present posture of our affairs, which is that the Dutch are known to be abroad with 80 sail of ships of war and 20 fire ships, and the French come into the Channel with 20 sail of men of war and 5 fire ships, while we have not a ship at sea to do them any hurt with, but are calling in all we can, while our ambassadors are treating at Breda, and the Dutch look upon them as come to beg peace, and use them accordingly. And all this through the negligence of our prince, who hath power, if he would, to master all these with the money and men that he hath had the command of, and may now have if he would mind his business. But for aught we see, the kingdom is likely to be lost, as well as the reputation of it is, for ever, notwithstanding so much reputation got and preserved by a rebel that went before him. This discourse of ours ended with sorrowful reflections upon our condition, and so broke up, and Creed and I got out of the room and away by water to Whitehall, and there he and I waited in the Treasury Chamber an hour or two, where we saw the country receivers and accountants for money come to attend. And one of them, a brisk young fellow with his hat cocked like a fool behind, as the present fashion among the blades is, committed to the sergeant. By and by, I, upon desire, was called in and delivered in my report of my accounts. Present, Lord Ashley, Clifford and Duncombe, who, being busy, did not read it but committed it to Sir George Downing, and so I was dismissed. But, Lord, to see how Duncombe doth take upon him is an eyesore, though I think he deserves great honour, but only the suddenness of his rise and his pride. But I do like the way of these lords that they admit nobody to use many words, nor do they spend many words themselves, but in great state do hear what they see necessary, and say little themselves, but bid withdraw. Thence Creed and I by water up to Vauxhall, and over against it stopped, thinking to see some cock-fighting, but it was just being done, and therefore back again to the other side and to Spring Garden, and there ate and drank a little, and then to walk up and down the garden, reflecting upon the bad management of things now, compared with what it was in the late rebellious times, when men, some for fear and some for religion, minded their business, which none now do by being void of both. Much talk of this and other kinds, very pleasant. And so, when it was almost night, we home, setting him in at Whitehall, I to Old Swan, and thence home, where to supper, and then to read a little, and so to bed. The 4th of June. Up and to the office, and there busy all the morning, putting in order the answering the great letter sent to the office by the new commissioners of the Treasury, who demand an account from the King's coming in to this day, which we shall do in the best manner we can. At noon, home to dinner, and after dinner comes Mr. Commander to me, and tells me, after all, that I cannot have a lease of the ground for my coach-house and stable, till a suit in law be ended about the end of the old stable now standing, which they and I would have pulled down to make a better way for a coach. I am a little sorry that I cannot presently have it, because I am pretty full in my mind of keeping a coach, but yet when I think on it again, the Dutch and French both at sea, and we poor and still out of order, I know not yet what turns there may be, and besides, I am in danger of parting with one of my places, which relates to the victualling, that brings me by accident in £800 a year, that is £300 from the King, and £500 from Dennis Gordon. I ought to be well contented to forbear a while, and therefore am contented. To the office all the afternoon, where I dispatched much business to my great content, and then home in the evening, and there to sing and pipe with my wife. And that being done, she fell all of a sudden to discourse about her clothes, and my humours in not suffering her to wear them as she pleases, and grew to high words between us. But I fell to read a book, Boyle's Hydrostatics, aloud in my chamber, and let her talk till she was tired, and vexed that I would not hear her, and so become friends and to bed together. The first night after 4 or 5 that she hath lain from me by reason of a great cold she had got. The 5th of June. Up and with Mr. Kynaston by coach to Whitehall, to the Commissioners of the Treasury, about getting money for Tangier, and did come to speak with them after long waiting, and there I find them all sat, and among the rest, Duncombe, lolling with his heels upon another chair by that he sat upon, and had an answer good enough, and then away home, it being a most windy day, and hath been so all night, south-west, and we have great hopes that it may have done the Dutch or French fleet some hurt. And having got some papers in order, I back to St. James's, where we all met at Sir William Coventry's chamber, and dined and talked of our business, he being a most excellent man, and indeed with all his business, hath more of his employed upon the good of the service of the navy than all of us, that makes me ashamed of it. This noon Captain Perriman brings us word how the Happy Return below in the Hope, ordered to carry the Portugal ambassador to Holland, and the ambassador, I think, on board, refused to go till paid, and by their example 2 or 3 more ships are in a mutiny, which is a sad consideration, while so many of the enemy's ships are at this day triumphing in the sea. Here a very good and neat dinner after the French manner, and good discourse, and then up after dinner to the Duke of York, and did our usual business, and are put in hopes by Sir William Coventry that we shall have money. And so away, Sir George Carteret and I, to my Lord Crewe, to advise about Sir George Carteret's carrying his accounts, tomorrow, to the commissioners appointed to examine them, and all other accounts since the war, who at last, by the King's calling them to him yesterday, and chiding them, will sit. But Littleton and Garraway much against their wills. And the truth of it, it is a ridiculous thing, for it will come to nothing, nor do the King nor kingdom good in any manner, I think. Here they talked of my Lord Hinchingbroke's match with my Lord Burlington's daughter, which is now gone a pretty way forward, and to great content, which I am infinitely glad of. So from thence to Whitehall, and in the street Sir George Carteret showed me a gentleman coming by in his coach, who hath been sent for up out of Lincolnshire. I think he says he is a justice of peace there, that the council have laid by the heels here, and here lies in a messenger's hands for saying that a man and his wife are but one person, and so ought to pay but 12 pence for both to the poll bill, by which others were led to do the like, and so here he lies prisoner. To Whitehall, and there I attended to speak with Sir William Coventry about Lanyon's business, to get him some money out of the prize office from my Lord Ashley, and so home, and there to the office a little, and thence to my chamber to read and supper, and to bed. My father, blessed be God, finds great ease by his new steel truss, which he put on yesterday. So to bed. The Duke of Cambridge past hopes of living still. The 6th of June. Up into the office all the morning, where, which he hath not done a great while, Sir George Carteret came to advise with us for the disposing of £10,000, which is the first sum the new Lord's Treasurers have provided us, but unless we have more, this will not enable us to cut off any of the growing charge, which they seem to give it us for, and expect we should discharge several ships quite off with it. So home, and with my father and wife to Sir William Penn's to dinner, which they invited us to out of their respect to my father, as a stranger, though I know them as false as the devil himself, and that it is only that they think it fit to oblige me, wherein I am a happy man that all my fellow officers are desirous of my friendship. Here as merry as in so false a place and where I must dissemble my hatred I could be. And after dinner, my father and wife to a play, and I to my office, and there busy all the afternoon till late at night. And then my wife and I sang a song or two in the garden, and so home to supper and to bed. This afternoon comes Mr. Pierce to me about some business, and tells me that the Duke of Cambridge is yet living, but every minute expects to die, and is given over by all people, which indeed is a sad loss. The 7th of June. Up and after with my flageolet and Mr. Townsend, whom I sent for to come to me, to discourse about my Lord Sandwich's business, for whom I am in some pain, lest the accounts of the wardrobe may not be in so good order as may please the new Lord's treasurers, who are quick-sighted, and under obligations of recommending themselves to the King and the world by their finding and mending of faults, and are, most of them, not the best friends to my Lord. And to the office, and there all the morning. At noon, home to dinner, my father, wife and I, and a good dinner. And then to the office again, where busy all the afternoon also, I having a desire to dispatch all business that hath lain long on my hands. And so to it till the evening, and then home, and to sing and pipe with my wife. And then to supper and to bed, my head full of thoughts how to keep, if I can, some part of my wages as surveyor of the victualling, which I see must now come to be taken away among the other places that have been occasioned by this war, and the rather because I have of late an inclination to keep a coach. Ever since my drinking 2 days ago some very cool drink at Sir William Coventry's table, I have been full of wind and with some pain, and I was afeard the last night that it would amount to much. But blessed be God, I find that the worst is past, so that I do clearly see all the indisposition I am liable to-day as to sickness is only the colic. This day I read, shown me by Mr. Gibson, a discourse newly come forth of the King of France, his pretence to Flanders, which is a very fine discourse, and the truth is, hath so much of the civil law in it that I am not a fit judge of it. But, as it appears to me, he hath a good pretence to it by right of his queen. So to bed. The 8th of June. Up and to the office, where all the news this morning is that the Dutch are come with a fleet of 80 sail to Harwich, and that guns were heard plain by Sir William Ryder's people at Bethnal Green all yesterday noon. So to the office we all, and sat all the morning, and then home to dinner, where our dinner, a ham of French bacon boiled with pigeons, an excellent dish. Here dined with us only Will Hewers and his mother. After dinner to the office again, where busy till night, and then home, and to read a little, and then to bed. The news is confirmed that the Dutch are off of Harwich, but have done nothing last night. The King hath sent down my Lord of Oxford to raise the country there, and all the western barges are taken up to make a bridge over river about the Hope, for horse to cross the river if there be occasion. The 9th of June, Lord's Day. Up and by water to Whitehall, and so walked to St. James's, where I hear that the Duke of Cambridge, who was given over long since by the doctors, is now likely to recover, for which God be praised. To Sir William Coventry, and there talked with him a great while, and mighty glad I was of my good fortune to visit him, for it keeps in my acquaintance with him, and the world sees it and reckons my interest accordingly. In comes my Lord Berkeley, who is going down to Harwich also to look after the militia there, and there is also the Duke of Monmouth, and with him a great many young Hectors, the Lord Chesterfield, my Lord Mandeville, and others, but to little purpose, I fear, but to debauch the country women thereabouts. My Lord Berkeley wanting some maps, and Sir William Coventry recommending the 6 maps of England that are bound up for the pocket, I did offer to present my Lord with them, which he accepted, and so I will send them him. Thence to Whitehall, and there to the chapel, where I met Creed, and he and I stayed to hear who preached, which was a man that begun dully, and so we away by water and landed in Southwark, and to a church in the street where we take water beyond the bridge, which was so full and the weather hot, We could not stand there, so to my house where we find my father and wife at dinner. And after dinner Creed and I by water to Whitehall, and there we parted, and I to Sir George Carteret's, where, he busy, I up into the house, and there met with a gentleman, Captain Aldridge, that belongs to my Lord Berkeley, and I did give him the book of maps for my lord. And so I to Westminster Church, and there stayed a good while, and saw Betty Mitchell there. So away thence, and after church time to Mistress Martin's, and there, athe what your would with her, and then took boat, and up all alone a most excellent evening, as high as Barn Elms, and there took a turn, and then to my boat again and home, reading and making an end of the book I lately bought, a merry satire called The Visions, translated from Spanish by Lestrange, wherein there are many very pretty things, but the translation is, as to the rendering it in English expression, the best that ever I saw, it being impossible almost to conceive that it should be a translation. Being come home, I find an order come for the getting some fireships presently to annoy the Dutch, who are in the King's Channel and expected up higher. So William Batten and William Penn being come this evening from their country houses to town, we did issue orders about it, and then home to supper and to bed. The 10th of June. Up, and news brought us that the Dutch are come up as high as the Nore, and more pressing orders for fireships. William Batten, William Penn and I to St. James's, where the Duke of York gone this morning betimes to send away some men down to Chatham. So we three to Whitehall and met Sir William Coventry, who presses all the possible for fireships. So we three to the office presently, and thither comes Sir Freshville Hollis, who is to command them all in some exploits he has to do with them on the enemy in the river. So we all down to Deptford and pitch upon ships and set men at work. But, Lord, to see how backwardly things move at this pinch, notwithstanding that by the enemy's being now come up as high as almost the Hope, Sir John Minnis, who was gone down to pay some ships there, hath sent up the money, and so we are possessed of money to do what we will with. Yet partly ourselves, being used to be idle and in despair, and partly people that have been used to be deceived by us as to money, won't believe us, and we know not, though we have it, how almost to promise it, and our wants such, and men out of the way, that it is an admirable thing to consider how much the king suffers, and how necessary it is in a state to keep the king's service always in a good posture and credit. Here I ate a bit, and then in the afternoon took boat and down to Greenwich, where I find the stairs full of people, there being a great riding there today for a man, the constable of the town, whose wife beat him. Here I was with much ado fain to press two watermen to make me a galley, and so to Woolwich to give order for the dispatch of a ship I have taken under my care to see dispatched, and orders being so given, I, under pretence to fetch up the ship which lay at Gray's, the Golden Hand, did do that in my way, and went down to Gravesend, where I find the Duke of Albemarle just come, with a great many idle lords and gentlemen with their pistols and fooleries, and the bulwark, not able to have stood half an hour had they come up. But the Dutch are fallen down from the Hope, and Shell Haven as low as the Sheerness, and we do plainly at this time hear the guns play. Yet I do not find the Duke of Albemarle intends to go thither, but stays here tonight, and hath, though the Dutch are gone, ordered our frigates to be brought in a line between the two blockhouses, which I took then to be a ridiculous thing. So I away into the town and took a captain or two of our ships, who did give me an account of the proceedings of the Dutch fleet in the river, to the tavern, and there we ate and drank, and I find the town had removed most of their goods out of the town, for fear of the Dutch coming up to them. And Sir John Griffin told me that last night there was not 12 men to be got in the town to defend it, which the master of the house tells me is not true, but that the men of the town did intend to stay, though they did indeed, and so had he, at the ship, removed their goods. Thence went off to an Ostend man of war, just now come up, who met the Dutch fleet, who took 3 ships that he came convoying hither from him, says they are as low as the Nore or thereabouts. So I homeward, as long as it was light, reading Mr. Boyle's book of hydrostatics, which is a most excellent book as ever I read, and I will take much pains to understand him through, if I can, the doctrine being very useful. When it grew too dark to read, I lay down and took a nap, it being a most excellent fine evening, and about 1 o'clock got home, and after having wrote to Sir William Coventry an account of what I had done and seen, which is entered in my letter-book, I to bed. The 11th of June. Up and more letters still from Sir William Coventry about more fireships. And so William Batten and I to the office where Brunker came to us, who is just now going to Chatham upon a desire of Commissioner Pets, who is in a very fearful stink for fear of the Dutch, and desires help for God and the King and Kingdom's sake. So Brunker goes down, and Sir John Minnis also, from Gravesend. This morning Pet writes us word that Sheerness is lost last night, after 2 or 3 hours' dispute. The enemy hath possessed himself of the place, which is very sad and puts us into great fears of Chatham. Sir William Batten and I down by water to Deptford, and there Sir William Penn and we did consider of several matters relating to the dispatch of the fireships. And so William Batten and I home again, and there to dinner, my wife and father having dined. And after dinner, by William Hewer's lucky advice, went to Mr. Fenn, and did get him to pay me above £400 of my wages, and Will Hewer received it for me and brought it home this night. Thence, I meeting Mr. Moore, went toward the other end of the town by coach, and spying Mercer in the street, I took leave of Moore and Light and followed her, and at Paul's overtook her and walked with her through the dusty street almost to home, and there in Lombard Street met Theophila Turner in coach, who had been at my house to see us, being to go out of town tomorrow to the northward. And so I promised to see her tomorrow, and then home, and there to our business, hiring some fireships, and receiving every hour almost letters from Sir William Coventry, calling for more fireships, and an order from Council to enable us to take any man's ships. And Sir William Coventry, in his letter to us, says he doth not doubt, but at this time, under an invasion, as he owns it to be, the King may by law take any man's goods. At this business late and then home, where a great deal of serious talk with my wife about the sad state we are in, and especially from the beating up of drums this night for the train bands, upon pain of death to appear in arms tomorrow morning, with bullet and powder and money to supply themselves with victuals for a fortnight, which, considering the soldiers drawn out to Chatham and elsewhere, looks as if they had a design to ruin the city and give it up to be undone, which I hear makes the sober citizens to think very sadly of things. So to bed after supper, ill in my mind. This afternoon Mistress Williams sent to me to speak with her, which I did only about news. I had not spoke with her many a day before by reason of carcasses business. The 12th of June. Up very betimes to our business at the office, their hiring of more fireships, and at it close all the morning. At noon, home and Sir William Penn dined with us. By and by, after dinner, my wife out by coach to see her mother, and I in another, being afeard at this busy time to be seen with a woman in a coach, as if I were idle, toward Theophila Turner's, but met Sir William Coventry's boy, and there in his letter find that the Dutch had made no motion since their taking Sheerness, and the Duke of Albemarle writes that all is safe as to the great ships against any assault, the boom and chain being so fortified, which put my heart into great joy. When I came to Sir William Coventry's chamber, I find him abroad, but his clerk Powell doth tell me that ill news is come to court of the Dutch breaking the chain at Chatham, which struck me to the heart, and to Whitehall to hear the truth of it. And there, going up the park stairs, I did hear some lackeys speaking of sad news come to court, saying that hardly anybody in the court but doth look as if they cried, and would not go into the house for fear of being seen, but slunk out and got into a coach. And to Theophila Turner, to Sir William Turner's, where I met Roger Pepys, newly come out of the country. He and I talked aside a little, he offering a match for Paul, one Barnes, of whom we shall talk more the next time. His father married a Pepys. In discourse he told me further that his grandfather, my great-grandfather, had £800 per annum in Queen Elizabeth's time in the very town of Cottenham, and that we did certainly come out of Scotland with the Abbot of Crowland. More talk I had, and shall have more with him, but my mind is so sad, and head full of this ill news, that I cannot now set it down. A short visit here, my wife coming to me, and took leave of Theophila, and so home where all our hearts do now ache. For the news is true, that the Dutch have broke the chain and burnt our ships, and particularly the Royal Charles. Other particulars I know not, but most sad to be sure. And the truth is, I do fear so much that the whole kingdom is undone, that I do this night resolve to study with my father and wife what to do with the little that I have in money by me, for I give all the rest that I have in the king's hands for Tangier for lost. So God help us, and God knows what disorders we may fall into, and whether any violence on this office, or perhaps some severity on our persons, as being reckoned by the silly people, or perhaps may by policy of state be thought fit to be condemned by the King and Duke of York, and so put to trouble, though God knows I have in my own person done my full duty, I'm sure. So having with much ado finished my business at the office, I home to consider with my father and wife of things, and then to supper and to bed with a heavy heart. The manner of my advising this night with my father was, I took him and my wife up to her chamber, and shut the door, and there told them the sad state of the times, how we are like to be all undone, that I do fear some violence will be offered to this office, where all I have in the world is, and resolved upon sending it away, sometimes into the country, sometimes my father to lie in town and have the gold with him at Sarah Giles's, and with that resolution went to bed, full of fear and fright. Hardly slept all night. The 13th of June. No sooner up but hear the sad news confirmed of the Royal Charles being taken by them, and now in fitting by them, which Pet should have carried up higher by our several orders, and deserves therefore to be hanged for not doing it, and burning several others, and that another fleet is come up into the Hope, upon which news the King and Duke of York have been below since 4 o'clock in the morning, to command the sinking of ships at Barking Creek and other places, to stop their coming up higher, which put me into such a fear that I presently resolved of my father's and wife's going into the country, and at 2 hours' warning they did go by the coach this day, with about £1,300 in gold in their night-bag. Pray God give them good passage, and good care to hide it when they come home, but my heart is full of fear. They gone, I continued in frights and fear what to do with the rest. Will Hewer hath been at the banker's, and hath got £500 out of Backwell's hands of his own money, but they are so called upon that they will be all broke. Hundreds coming to them for money, and their answer is, it is payable at 20 days. When the days are out, we will pay you. And those that are not so, they make tell over their money, and make their bags false on purpose to give cause to retell it, and so spend time. I cannot have my 200 pieces of gold again for silver, all being bought up last night that were to be had, and sold for 24 and 25 shillings apiece. So I must keep the silver by me, which sometimes I think to fling into the house of office, and then again know not how I shall come by it if we be made to leave the office. Every minute some one or other calls for this order or that order, and so I forced to be at the office most of the day about the fireships, which are to be suddenly fitted out. And it's a most strange thing that we hear nothing from any of my brethren at Chatham, so that we are wholly in the dark. Various being the reports of what is done there, insomuch that I sent Mr. Clapham express thither to see how matters go. I did, about noon, resolve to send Mr. Gibson away after my wife with another 1,000 pieces, under colour of an express to Sir Jeremy Smith, who is, as I hear, with some ships at Newcastle, which I did really send to him, and may possibly prove of good use to the King, for it is possible, in the hurry of business, they may not think of it at court, and the charge of express is not considerable to the King. So, though I intend Gibson no further than to Huntingdon, yet I direct him to send the packet forward. My business, the most of the afternoon, is listening to everybody that comes to the office. What news, which is variously related, some better, some worse, but nothing certain. The King and Duke of York up and down all the day here and there, some time on Tower Hill where the city militia was, where the King did make a speech to them, that they should venture themselves no further than he would himself. I also sent, my mind being in pain, Saunders after my wife and father, to overtake them at their night's lodging, to see how matters go with them. In the evening I sent for my cousin Sarah and her husband, who came and I did deliver them my chest of writings about Brampton, and my brother Tom's papers, and my journals, which I value much, and did send my two silver flagons to Kate Joyce's, that so being scattered what I have, something might be saved. I have also made a girdle, by which with some trouble I do carry about me £300 in gold about my body, that I may not be without something in case I should be surprised. For I think in any nation but ours, people that appear, for we are not indeed so, so faulty as we, would have their throats cut. In the evening comes Mr. Pelling and several others to the office, and tell me that never were people so dejected as they are in the city all over at this day, and do talk most loudly, even treason, as that we are bought and sold, that we are betrayed by the papists and others about the king, cry out that the office of the ordnance hath been so backward as no powder to have been at Chatham, nor Upnor Castle till such a time, and the carriages all broken, that Legg is a papist, that Upnor, the old good castle built by Queen Elizabeth, should be lately slighted, that the ships at Chatham should not be carried up higher. They look upon us as lost, and remove their families and rich goods in the city, and do think verily that the French, being come down with his army to Dunkirk, it is to invade us, and that we shall be invaded. Mr. Clark, the solicitor, comes to me about business, and tells me that he hears that the King hath chosen Mr. Pierpoint and Vaughan of the West, privy councillors, that my Lord Chancellor was affronted in the hall this day by people telling him of his Dunkirk house, and that there are regiments ordered to be got together, whereof to be commanders, my Lord Fairfax, Ingoldsby, Bethel, Norton, and Birch, and other Presbyterians, and that Dr. Bates will have liberty to preach. Now, whether this be true or not, I know not, but do think that nothing but this will unite us together. Late at night comes Mr. Hudson, the cooper, my neighbour, and tells me that he came from Chatham this evening at 5 o'clock, and saw this afternoon the Royal James, Oak, and London burnt by the enemy with their fireships, that two or three men of war came up with them and made no more of Upnor's Castle's shooting than of a fly, that these ships lay below Upnor Castle, but therein I conceive he is in an error, that the Dutch are fitting out the Royal Charles that we shot so far as from the yard thither, so that the shot did no good, for the bullets grazed on the water, that Upnor played hard with their guns at first, but slowly afterward, either from the men being beat off or their powder spent. But we hear that the fleet and the Hope is not come up any higher the last flood. And Sir William Batten tells me that ships are provided to sink in the river about Woolwich, that will prevent their coming up higher if they should attempt it. I made my will also this day, and did give all I had equally between my father and wife, and left copies of it in each of Mr. Hayter and Will Hewer's hands, who both witnessed the will. And so to supper, and then to bed, and slept pretty well, but yet often waking. The 14th of June. Up and to the office where Mr. Fryer comes, and tells me that there are several Frenchmen and Flemish ships in the river, with passes from the Duke of York for carrying of prisoners that ought to be parted from the rest of the ships, and their powder taken, lest they do fire themselves when the enemy comes, and so spoil us, which is good advice, I think, and will give notice of it, and did so. But it is pretty odd to see how everybody, even at this high time of danger, puts business off of their own hands. He says that he told this to the Lieutenant of the Tower, to whom I, for the same reason, was directing him to go, and the Lieutenant of the Tower bade him come to us, for he had nothing to do with it. And yesterday comes Captain Crow off one of the fireships, and told me that the officers of the Ordnance would deliver his gunner's materials, but not compound them, but that we must do it, whereupon I was forced to write to them about it, and one that, like a great many, comes to me this morning. By and by comes Mr. Wilson, and, by direction of his, a man of Mr. Gordon's who came from Chatham last night and saw the three ships burnt, they lying all dry, and boats going from the men of war and fire them. But that he tells me of worst consequence is that he himself, I think he said, did hear many Englishmen on board the Dutch ships speaking to one another in English, and that they did cry and say, "We did heretofore fight for tickets, now we fight for dollars," and did ask how such and such a one did, and would commend themselves to them, which is a sad consideration. And Mr. Lewis, who was present at this fellow's discourse to me, did tell me that he is told that when they took the Royal Charles, they said that they had their tickets signed, and showed some, and that now they came to have them paid, and would have them paid before they parted. And several seamen came this morning to me to tell me that if I would get their tickets paid, they would go and do all they could against the Dutch, but otherwise they would not venture being killed, and lose all they have already fought for. So that I was forced to try what I could do to get them paid. This man tells me that the ships burnt last night did lie above Upnor Castle over against the dock, and the boats came from the ships of war and burnt them. All which is very sad, and masters of ships that we are now taking up do keep from their ships all their stores, or as much as they can, so that we can dispatch them, having not time to appraise them nor secure their payment. Only some little money we have, which we are fain to pay the men we have with, every night, or they will not work. And indeed the hearts as well as affections of the seamen are turned away, and in the open streets, in Wapping and up and down, the wives have cried publicly, "This comes of your not paying our husbands, and now your work is undone, or done by hands that understand it not." And Sir William Batten told me that he was himself affronted with a woman in language of this kind himself, on Tower Hill, publicly, yesterday, and we are fain to bear it, and to keep one at the office door to let no idle people in, for fear of firing of the office and doing us mischief. The city is troubled at their being put upon duty, summoned 1 hour and discharged 2 hours after, and then again summoned 2 hours after that, to their great charge as well as trouble, and Pelling, the apothecary, tells me the world says all over that less charge than what the kingdom is put to, of one kind or other, by this business, would have set out all our great ships. It is said they did in open streets yesterday, at Westminster, cry, "A Parliament! A Parliament!" and do believe it will cost blood to answer for these miscarriages. We do not hear that the Dutch are come to Gravesend, which is a wonder, but a wonderful thing it is that to this day we have not one word yet from Brunker, or Peter Pett, or John Minnis, or anything at Chatham. The people that come here that to hear how things go make me ashamed to be found unable to answer them, for I am left alone here at the office. And the truth is, I am glad my station is to be here, near my own home and out of danger, yet in a place of doing the King good service. I have this morning good news from Gibson. 3 letters, from 3 several stages, that he was safe last night as far as Royston, at between 9 and 10 at night. The dismay that is upon us all in the business of the kingdom and navy at this day is not to be expressed otherwise than by the condition the citizens were in when the city was on fire, nobody knowing which way to turn themselves, while everything concurred to greaten the fire, as here the easterly gale and spring tides for coming up both rivers and enabling them to break the chain. Dennis Gordon did tell me yesterday that the day before at the council they were ready to fall together by the ears at the council table, arraigning one another of being guilty of the council that brought us into this misery by laying up all the great ships. Mr. Hayter tells me at noon that some rude people have been, as he hears, at my Lord Chancellor's, where they have cut down the trees before his house and broke his windows, and a gibbet either set up before or painted upon his gate, and these words writ, 3 sights to be seen, Dunkirk, Tangier, and a barren queen." It gives great matter of talk that it is said there is at this hour in the Exchequer as much money as is ready to break down the floor, This arises, I believe, from Sir George Downing's late talk of the greatness of the sum lying there of people's money that they would not fetch away, which he showed me and a great many others. Most people that I speak with are in doubt how we shall do to secure our seamen from running over to the Dutch, which is a sad but very true consideration at this day. At noon am told that my Lord Duke of Albemarle is made Lord High Constable, the meaning whereof at this time I know not, nor whether it be true or no. Dined and Mr. Hayter and Will Hewer with me, where they do speak very sorrowfully of the posture of the times, and how people do cry out in the streets of their being bought and sold, and both they and everybody that come to me do tell me that people make nothing of talking treason in the streets openly, as that we are bought and sold and governed by papists, and that we are betrayed by people about the king, and shall be delivered up to the French, and I know not what. At dinner we discoursed of Tom of the Wood, a fellow that lives like a hermit near Woolwich, who, as they say, and Mr. Bodham, they tell me, affirms that he was by at the justices when some did accuse him there for it, did foretell the burning of the city, now says that a greater desolation is at hand. Thence we read and laughed at Lilly's prophecies this month, in his almanac this year. So to the office, after dinner, and thither comes Mr. Pierce, who tells me his condition, how he cannot get his money, about £500, which he says is a very great part of what he hath for his family and children, out of Viner's hand, and indeed it is to be feared that this will wholly undo the bankers. He says he knows nothing of the late affronts to my Lord Chancellor's house, as is said, nor hears of the Duke of Albemarle's being made High Constable, but says that they are in great distraction at Whitehall, and that everywhere people do speak high against Sir William Coventry, but he agrees with me that he is the best minister of state the king hath. And so, from my heart, I believe. At night came home Sir William Batten and William Penn, who only can tell me that they have placed guns at Woolwich and Deptford, and sunk some ships below Woolwich and Blackwall, and are in hopes that they will stop the enemy's coming up. But strange our confusion, that among them that are sunk, they have gone and sunk without consideration the Frankin, one of the king's ships, with stores to a very considerable value, that hath been long loaden for supply of the ships and the new ship at Bristol, and much wanted there. And nobody will own that they directed it, but do lay it on Sir William Ryder. They speak also of another ship, loaden to the value of £80,000, sunk with the goods in her, or at least was mightily contended for by him, and a foreign ship that had the faith of the nation for her security, this Sir Richard Ford tells us. And it is too plain a truth that both here and at Chatham, the ships that we have sunk have many, and the first of them, been ships completely fitted for fireships at great charge. But most strange, the backwardness and disorder of all people, especially the king's people in pay, to do any work, Sir William Penn tells me, all crying out for money. And it was so at Chatham that this night comes an order from Sir William Coventry to stop the pay of the wages of that yard, the Duke of Albemarle having related that not above 3 of 1,100 in pay there did attend to do any work there. This evening, having sent a messenger to Chatham on purpose, we have received a dull letter from my Lord Brunker and Peter Pett, how matters have gone there this week. But not so much or so particular as we knew it by common talk before, and as true. I doubt they will be found to have been but slow men in this business, and they say the Duke of Albemarle did tell my Lord Brunker to his face that his discharging of the great ships there was the cause of all this, and I am told that it is become common talk against my Lord Brunker, but in that he is to be justified, for he did it by verbal order from Sir William Coventry, and with good intent, and was to good purpose, whatever the success be, for the men would have but spent the king so much the more in wages, and yet not attended on board to have done the king any service. And as an evidence of that just now, being the 15th day in the morning that I am writing yesterday's passages, one is with me, Jacob Bryan, purser of the princess, who confesses to me that he hath above 180 men born at this day in victuals and wages on that ship lying at Chatham, being lately brought in thither, of which 180 there was not above 5 prepared to do the king any service at this late business. And this morning also, some of the Cambridge's men came up from Portsmouth by order from Sir Freshville Hollis, who boasted to us the other day that he had sent for 50, and would be hanged if 100 did not come up, that would do as much as twice the number of other men. I say some of them, instead of being at work at Deptford, where they were intended, do come to the office this morning to demand the payment of their tickets, for otherwise they would, they said, do no more work, and are, as I understand from everybody that have to do with them, the most debauched, damning, swearing rogues that ever were in the Navy, just like their profane commander. So to William Batten's to sit and talk a little, and then home to my flageolet, my heart being at pretty good ease by a letter from my wife, brought by Saunders, that my father and wife got well last night to their inn, and out again this morning, and Gibson's being got safe to Caxton at 12 last night. So to supper, and then to bed. No news today of any motion of the enemy, either upwards towards Chatham, or this way. The 15th of June. All the morning at the office, no news more than last night, only Purser Tyler comes and tells me that he being at all the passages in this business at Chatham, he says there have been horrible miscarriages, such as we shall shortly hear of, that the want of boats hath undone us, and it is commonly said, and Sir John Minnis under his hand tells us, that they were employed by the men of the yard to carry away their goods, and I hear that Commissioner Pett will be found the first man that begun to remove. He is much spoken against, and Brunker is complained of and reproached for discharging the men of the great ships heretofore. At noon Mr. Hayter dined with me and tells me he believes that it will hardly be the want of money alone that will excuse to the Parliament the neglect of not setting out a fleet, it having never been harbour-bound in our greatest straits. But however unlikely that it appeared, yet when it was gone about, the state or king did compass it, and there is something in it. In like manner all the afternoon busy, vexed to see how slowly things go on for want of money. At night comes, unexpectedly so soon, Mr. Gibson, who left my wife well, and all got down well with them, but not with himself, who, which I was afeard of, and cannot blame him, but must myself be wiser against another time, had one of his bags broke through his breeches, and some pieces dropped out, not many, he thinks, but 2, for he lied and took them up and went back and could find no more, but I am not able to tell how many, which troubles me, but the joy of having the greatest part safe there makes me bear with it, so as not to afflict myself for it. This afternoon poor Betty Mitchell, whom I love, sent to tell my wife her child was dying, which I am troubled for, poor girl. At night home and to my flageolet, played with pleasure, but with a heavy heart. Only it pleased me to think how it may please God I may live to spend my time in the country, with plainness and pleasure, though but with little glory. So to supper and to bed. The 16th of June, Lord's Day. Up and called on by several on business of the office, then to the office to look out some of my old letters to William Coventry, in order to preparing for justifying this office in our frequent foretelling the want of money. By and by comes Roger Pepys and his son Talbot, whom he had brought to town to settle at the Temple, but by reason of our present stirs will carry him back again with him this week. He seems to be but a silly lad. I sent them to church this morning, I staying at home at the office, busy. At noon, home to dinner, and much good discourse with him, he being mighty sensible of our misery and maladministration. Talking of these straits we are in, he tells me that my Lord Arlington did the last week take up £12,000 in gold, which is very likely, for all was taken up that could be. Discoursing afterward with him of our family, he told me that when I come to his house he will show me a decree in Chancery, wherein there was 26 men, all housekeepers, in the town of Cottenham, in Queen Elizabeth's time, of our name. He to church again in the afternoon, I stayed at home busy, and did show some dalliance to my maid Nell, speaking to her of her sweetheart, which she owned, silly girl. After sermon, Roger Pepys comes again. I spent the evening with him, much troubled with the thoughts of the evils of our time, whereon we discoursed. By and by, occasion offered for my writing to Sir William Coventry a plain bold letter touching lack of money, which, when it was gone, I was afeard might give offence. But upon two or three readings over again, the copy of it, I was satisfied it was a good letter, only Sir William Batten signed it with me, which I could wish I had done alone. Roger Pepys gone, I to the garden, and there dallied a while all alone with Mistress Markham, and then home to my chamber, and to read and write, and then to supper and to bed. The 17th of June. Up and to my office, where busy all the morning, particularly setting my people to work in transcribing pieces of letters, public and private, which I do collect against a black day, to defend the office with and myself. At noon dined at home Mr. Hayter with me alone, who doth seem to be confident that this nation will be undone, and with good reason. Wishes himself at Hamburg, as a great many more, he says, he believes do, but nothing but the reconciling of the Presbyterian party will save us, and I am of his mind. At the office all the afternoon, where every moment business of one kind or other about the fireships and other businesses, most of them vexatious, for want of money. The commanders all complaining that if they miss to pay their men a night, they run away. Seamen demanding money by them by way of advance, and some of Sir Hollis's men, that he so bragged of, demanding their tickets to be paid or they would not work. This Hollis, Sir William Batten and William Penn say, proves a very wind-fucker, as Sir William Batten terms him, and the other called him a conceited, idle, prating, lying fellow. But it was pleasant this morning to hear Hollis give me the account, which he says he told the King in Commissioner Pett's presence, whence it was that his ship was fit sooner than others, telling the King how he dealt with the several commissioners and agents of the ports where he comes, offering Lanyon to carry him a ton or two of goods to the Straits, giving Middleton an hour or two's hearing of his stories of Barbados, going to prayer with Taylor, and standing bare and crying, "If it please your honour," to Pett. But William Penn says that he tells this story to everybody, and believes it to be a very lie. At night comes Captain Cock to see me, and he and I an hour in the garden together. He tells me there have been great endeavours of bringing in the Presbyterian interest, but that it will not do. He named to me several of the insipid lords that are to command the army that are to be raised. He says the King and court are all troubled, and the gates of the court were shut up upon the first coming of the Dutch to us. But do mind the business no more than ever. That the bankers, he fears, are broke as to ready money, though Viner had £100,000 by him when our troubles begun. That he and the Duke of Albemarle have received into their own hands of Viner, the former £10,000 and the latter £12,000 in tallies or assignments to secure what was in his hand of theirs. And many other great men of our masters have done the like, which is no good sign when they begin to fear the main. He and everybody cries out of the office of the ordnance for their neglects, both at Gravesend and Upnor and everywhere else. He gone, I to my business again, and then home to supper and to bed. I've lately played the fool much with our Nell, in playing with her breasts. This night late comes a porter with a letter from Monsieur Pratt, to borrow £100 for my Lord Hinchingbroke, to enable him to go out with his troop in the country as he is commanded, but I did find an excuse to decline it. Among other reasons to myself this is one, to teach him the necessity of being a good husband and keeping money or credit by him. The 18th of June. Up and did this morning dally with Nell and touch her thing, which I was afterward troubled for. To the office, and there all the morning. Peg Penn came to see me, and I was glad of it, and did resolve to have tried her this afternoon, but that there was company with Ella at my house, whither I got her. Dined at home Will Hewer with me, and then to the office, and to my Lady Penn's, and did find occasion for Peg to go home with me to my chamber, but there being an idle gentleman with them, he went with us, and I lost my hope. So to the office, and by word was brought me that Commissioner Pett is brought to the Tower, and there laid up close prisoner, which puts me into a fright, lest they may do the same with us as they do with him. This puts me upon hastening what I'm doing with my people, and collecting out of my papers our defence. Myself got Fist, Sir William Batten's clerk, and busy with him writing letters late, and then home to supper and to read myself asleep after piping, and so to bed. Great news tonight of the blowing up of one of the Dutch greatest ships, while a council of war was on board. The latter part, I doubt, is not so, it not being confirmed since, but the former, that they had a ship blown up, is said to be true. This evening comes Sir George Carteret to the office to talk of business at Sir William Batten's, where all to be undone for want of money, there being none to pay the chest at their public pay the 24th of this month, which will make us a scorn to the world. After he had done there, he and I into the garden and walked, and the greatest of our discourse is his sense of the requisiteness of his parting with his being Treasurer of the Navy, if he can, on any good terms. He doth harp upon getting my Lord Brunker to take it on half profit, but that he is not able to secure him in paying him so much. But the thing I do advise him to do by all means, and he resolves on it, it being but the same counsel which I intend to take for myself. My Lady Jem goes down to Hinchingbrook to lie down, because of the troubles of the times here. He tells me he is not sure that the King of France will not annoy us this year, but that the court seems to reckon upon it as a thing certain, for that is all that I and most people are afeard of this year. He tells me now the great question is, whether a parliament or no parliament, and says the parliament itself cannot be thought able at present to raise money, and therefore it will be to no purpose to call one. I hear this day poor Mitchell's child is dead. The 19th of June. Up and to the office, where all the morning busy with Fist again, beginning early to overtake my business in my letters, which for a post or two have by the late and present troubles been interrupted. At noon come Sir William Batten and William Penn, and we to William Penn's house, and there discoursed of business an hour, and by comes an order from Sir Richard Brown, commanding me this afternoon to attend the council board with all my books and papers, touching the Medway. I was ready to fear some mischief to myself, though that appears most reasonable is that it is to inform them about Commissioner Pett. I ate a little bit in haste at William Batten's without much comfort, being fearful, though I show it not, and to my office, and did get up some papers and find out the most material letters and orders in our books. And so took coach, and to the council chamber lobby, where I met Mr. Evelyn, who doth miserably decry our follies that brings all this misery upon us. While we were discoursing over our public misfortunes, I am called in to a large committee of the council. Present, the Duke of Albemarle, Anglesey, Arlington, Ashley, Carteret, Duncombe, Coventry, Ingram, Clifford, Lauderdale, Morris, Manchester, Craven, Carlisle, Bridgewater. And after Sir William Coventry's telling them what orders His Royal Highness had made for the safety of the Medway, I told them to great full content what we had done, and showed them our letters. Then was Peter Pett called in with the Lieutenant of the Tower. He is in his old clothes and looked most sillily. His charge was chiefly the not carrying up of the great ships, and the using of the boats in carrying away his goods, in which he answered very sillily, though his faults to me seem only great omissions. Lord Arlington and Coventry, very severe against him, the former saying that if he was not guilty, the world would think them all guilty. The latter urged that there must be some fault, and that the Admiral must be found to have done his part. I did say an unhappy word, which I was sorry for, when he complained of want of oars for the boats. And there was, it seems, enough, and good enough to carry away all the boats with, from the King's occasions. He said he used never a boat till they were all gone but one, and that was to carry away things of great value, and those were his models of ships, which when the council, some of them, had said they wished that the Dutch had had them instead of the King's ships, He answered he did believe the Dutch would have made more advantage of the models than of the ships, and the king have had greater loss thereby. This they all laughed at. After having heard him for an hour or more, they bid him withdraw, I all this while showing him no respect, but rather against him, for which God forgive me, for I mean no hurt to him, but only find that these lords are upon their own purgation, and it is necessary I should be so in behalf of the office. He being gone, they caused Sir Richard Brown to read over his minutes, and then my Lord Arlington moved that they might be put into my hands to put into form, I being more acquainted with such business, and they were so. So I away back with my books and papers, and when I got into the court, it was pretty to see how people gazed upon me, that I thought myself obliged to salute people and to smile, lest they should think I was a prisoner too. But afterward I found the most did take me to be there to bear evidence against Peter Pett. But my fear was such at my going in of the success of the day, that at my going in I did think fit to give Thomas Hayter, whom I took with me to wait the event, my closet key and directions where to find £500 and more in silver and gold, and my tallies, to remove in case of any misfortune to me. Thence to Sir George Carteret's to take my leave of my Lady Jem, who is going into the country tomorrow, but she being now at prayers with my lady and family, and hearing here by York the carrier that my wife was coming to town, I did make haste home to see her, that she might not find me abroad, it being the first minute I've been abroad since yesterday was se'night. It is pretty to see how strange it is to be abroad to see people, as it used to be after a month or two's absence, and I've brought myself so to it that I've no great mind to be abroad, which I could not have believed of myself. I got home, and after being there a little she came, and two of her fellow travellers with her, with whom we drank, a couple of merchant-like men, I think, but have friends in our country. They being gone, I and my wife to talk, who did give me so bad an account of her and my father's method in bearing of our gold, that made me mad, and she herself is not pleased with it, she believing that my sister knows of it. My father and she did it on Sunday when they were gone to church, in open daylight in the midst of the garden, where for aught they knew many eyes might see them, which put me into such trouble that I was almost mad about it, and presently cast about how to have it back again to secure it here, the times being a little better now, at least at Whitehall they seem as if they were, but one way or other I am resolved to free them from the place if I can get them. Such was my trouble at this that I fell out with my wife, that though new come to town, I did not sup with her nor speak to her tonight, but to bed and sleep. The 20th of June. Up without any respect to my wife, only answering her a question or two, without any anger, though. And so to the office, where all the morning busy, and among other things Mr. Barber came to me, one of the clerks of the ticket office, to get me to sign some tickets, and told me that all the discourse yesterday about that part of the town where he was that Mr. Pett and I were in the Tower, and I did hear the same before. At noon, home to dinner, and there my wife and I very good friends, the care of my gold being somewhat over, considering it was in their hands that have as much cause to secure it as myself almost. And so, if they will be mad, let them, but yet I do intend to send for it away. Here dined Mercer with us, and after dinner she cut my hair, and then I into my closet, and there slept a little, as I do now almost every day after dinner. And then, after dallying a little with Nell, which I am ashamed to think of, I away to the office, busy all the afternoon. In the evening did treat with, and in the end agree, but by some kind of compulsion, with the owners of 6 merchant ships to serve the king as men of war. But, Lord, to see how against the hair it is with these men and everybody to trust us and the king, and how unreasonable it is to expect they should be willing to lend their ships, and lay out £200 or £300 a man to fit their ships for new voyages, when we have not paid them half of what we owe them for their old services. I did write so to Sir William Coventry this night. At night my wife and I to walk and talk again about our gold, which I am not quiet in my mind to be safe, and therefore will think of some way to remove it, it troubling me very much. So home with my wife to supper and to bed. Miserable hot weather all night it was.